loosely coupled systems, is what are the key factors there? Is total application environment replication, meaning that you've got that environment ready to go in case of a disaster. 15 to 30 minutes down while you're doing a disaster recovery, which is significantly better than any type of other disaster recovery solutions. But I want to make sure you understand there would be some additional system management issues. There's really no free ride here. There's going to be cost in terms of dollars, and there's going to be some additional system management issues. And we're going to have Lou Moll here in a few minutes talk about why they went with coupled systems, you know, how they evaluated how they're going to actually implement that. So we'll hear more about the coupled systems in a minute.
About those system management issues, Brian, is that something where we can actually just send customers through training, or is that more just of a learning curve as the system management issues? The new environment about shadowing and how to best keep those databases in sync. Are those the type of issues you're talking about?
Yes, there's actually three different areas you could go after. One is a training issue, and we can provide that training so that people can become more familiar with loosely coupled systems and operating in redundant environments. A second case is, of course, there's going to be some learning by doing and experiencing this, and we've seen that over time, and the customers that we've talked to have made that transition very easy. And the next thing you've got to consider, though, is that there are some tools that are available to help you. When you get into multiple systems, some of the system management issues are if you have distributed systems, and you have multiple systems distributed, sometimes the operations can be a little more difficult. So you can buy a product like an OpenView System Manager that allows you to have kind of a single console view of all of these distributed systems. So really, there's all three points.
Good. I just wanted to clarify specifically what those issues were.
Okay. So let's just review real quick what the five steps were that we went through to build that business case. First is, remember, you've got to know the cost per hour. Understanding your cost per hour, don't just take the direct costs, okay? There's a lot of indirect costs that you have when your business are down. For example, if you're in the telemarketing industry and your system's down and your queue time is going up on callers coming in, and let's say you have a first-time caller trying to call in to your company and your system's down and they end up hanging up, there's going to be repeat business that you've now lost because that customer has kind of a bad taste in their mouth because of the service that they got. In manufacturing, there's all kinds of costs that are related with labor costs and line costs. So it's very important to try to look at the business as a whole, both direct costs and future. Second step, remember, was understanding how much and what type of downtime that you experience. And there's really no secret to that other than keeping a good, cold, hard log of all of your all of the events that happen on your system, and then transferring that to something that's readable, similar to the some of the chart that we included in this packet.
So they can take that template and basically stick it next to the system console, and the operator, as events occur, both planned and unplanned, they can log that. That's good.
Exactly. And third is you've got to have some kind of methodology of determining what the high availability objectives are for your company. We include the hierarchy of need, which is a way really to evaluate and review your objectives. And you really want to match those two. What is the value that your company is trying to provide your end customer? And system uptime most likely would play a role in that. Number four is working with your vendor very carefully and very closely to evaluate how much the benefit is and the hours that you buy back for a solution, and then how much do those solutions cost. So you're really trying to match your objectives to solutions, understanding what the cost is and what the payback is. And then fifth is you really want to build a documented business case, including all of the data that we talked about earlier.
Great, Brian.
Thanks a lot, Brian. That was very good. Brian is covering unplanned downtime for us. He did mention that Lou Moll is joining us. Lou actually went with a loosely coupled system solution, and Brian went through a lot of detail. I think in your case, Lou, things are a little bit more compelling for you and a little bit obvious to you that you needed to go with such a solution. Can you give us an idea as to what your situation was such that you decided to go with that?
Sure. Well, while we were evaluating where we would get the most bang for our buck as far as high availability is concerned, I guess the tendency is to kind of take advantage of the high reliability of the equipment itself and the operating systems and the subsystems. They don't seem to fail that often. You get lulled into a kind of a sense of security. So you might think, well, geez, maybe just roll the dice and do without all of this.
The business of Margaret and being a mortgage brokerage firm was critical that you needed a solution like this, correct?
That's correct. Since we aren't really a 7x24-hour operation, that was something that we looked into as far as a way to go. But we realized that all of our operations rely on the computer. We have to have that computer running. So when we look at as far as alternatives of the lower end of that pyramid, CPU switchover, disk mirroring, things of that nature, while those are good things to have, we decided that we really need to rely on a disaster recovery basis for us, because we cannot be out of business in the case of a disaster. And we have, since we're not 7x24, we have the luxury of buying some time for individual component failures within that other non-critical hours. So looking at the big picture for us, we really need a disaster recovery solution. And that was not a hard thing to sell. One of the things that makes it nice for us is that we are already geographically dispersed, and we have a servicing center in Richmond, which has one of our sister systems, a 992-100, and here in Islwyn, we have a 992-200. So with that already in place, it was pretty much a no-brainer when you look at the importance and the criticality of the business and how it relies on the computer, and looking at putting money into the lower end as far as disk mirroring and switchover, we decided to go right for the top.
Okay, so the loosely coupled system configuration actually fit what you already had set up.
That's correct.
Okay, and these locations are far enough away such that if there was some type of disaster, you would be able to offload from the one system to the other.
That's right. Not only are the two servicing centers geographically dispersed, but also our user base is geographically dispersed throughout the country. So the networking becomes a big issue for us.
Okay. Were there things that you've learned that were surprises or challenges that maybe if you could share with the other customers, they could avoid?
Well, I don't know whether they're going to be able to avoid everything, but I can certainly share with you some of the experiences that we had, and even a little anecdote that while we were implementing and testing SharePlex, we started to have a flood come in the computer center. During this snowy season out here, it was raining, and all of a sudden water came pouring in. We weren't quite implemented yet, but certainly the importance of having that solution suddenly rose to the top, and we were wishing that maybe we had done this a little sooner as the water came pouring in and the bilge pumps came to our rescue. So if there was any doubt, that certainly removed it at that point as far as a natural disaster occurring here.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that that we're doing in the process is consolidating a number of 3000s. We had a 960 and a 980 system that we are consolidating onto the 992-200.
Mm-hmm.
This is an ongoing process. We're still doing that now. But one of the things that forces us to do in reconsolidating information is really understanding the data. And the data flow is very important in understanding what you need to shadow and what you don't need. As applications have grown over time, we don't have a situation where we have everything that we need to shadow right in the data group of a particular account. If that would be ideal if that were the case, but it isn't. So in the process of consolidating the systems, we've really been forced to take a look at how we actually manipulate the data, what kind of data we have, and the types of data that we have. SharePlex is able to shadow both KSAM, MPE, and image files, and unfortunately we have critical files in all those forms.
Mm-hmm. And so what you're basically saying is, going through this process, you learned things about how you were using the data that is helpful to you anyway.
Exactly. Since we are going through a wide area link, we have to really try to preserve the bandwidth in place. And one of the features of SharePlex is that you can initially enable the shadowing of an entire group, for instance. But in our case, we don't want to do that since the entire groups aren't critical and aren't really needed to be shadowed. So we want to maximize the bandwidth by only putting across the wide area link the files that actually need to be shadowed and not any of the intermediate files or any of the temporary files or any of the pre-sorted files and things of that nature. So in doing this consolidation and reviewing the things that we actually have to do, we really became enlightened about the data processing that goes on in our computer center and the files that are important to us.
That's great. Were there any other benefits that you see that you're expecting or that you're already experiencing by implementing SharePlex or this loosely coupled solution?
Well, the immediate benefit was the disaster recovery, but as we started becoming more and more aware of the features of SharePlex, we were seeing things that we could also take advantage of. Some of the things that we're looking to do is definitely offload some of the processing. As Brian had mentioned, that being able to take advantage of that secondary system as much as possible really makes the cell go easier. We'll have two copies of backups, for instance. Now that we have two systems and we're shadowing, we'll have backups being done on both of those systems. So that gives us a little bit more reliance in case a backup, God forbid, ever goes bad. We have another backup on another system, besides actually having the two systems shadowed. The spooling capabilities, being able to spool through SharePlex to the secondary system, totally transparent, is a nice feature for us. The fact that we can distribute the data access without having to actually distribute the data or breaking it up into pieces or having redundant copies, it's a real big benefit. One thing that'll be nice is the OpenView System Management Console implementation, but we haven't done that yet. We're hoping, we have high expectations for it. If you've ever seen a 3,000 console with a lot of users, you see Gunda amounts of messages flowing across the screen. It really almost makes the console useless as far as monitoring system activity, and we're hoping that with the system management console and the interception of critical events and the icon changing to notify us that way, we'll be able to better take advantage of handling and managing SharePlex and our clustered environments.
So you bought the corporate business system DX that comes with the OpenView console?
Getting the OpenView system management console portion of SharePlex.
Okay. Outstanding. Is there anything else that you would like to share with the rest of the customers before we move on to the next section?
As Brian had mentioned, some of the things that we wrestled with as far as system management is concerned are things like the synchronization of the data. Since we have to ship tapes out to Virginia, there is some time lapse between we can actually get a tape there and restart shadowing it. If I can take a second, what synchronization means with regard to SharePlex is you have to have both sides of the image correct. If one side gets out of synchronization or the data isn't exactly mirrored, you have to stop at some point and resynchronize that end of the data. For us, that entails making a copy of the data here in Islin and then shipping that out to Virginia. This brought a point about the need for a little bit more disk space on this end, because you have the ability to queue up any transactions while you're waiting for that tape to get shipped down there, so you can still continue processing. And once the data set or file is synchronized, you can then unleash the floodgates and continue posting and bring that back up to the current version of the file. So we needed to take that into consideration. And also the training aspect. Everybody needs to be up to speed and also understand what's going on when there's a problem. And in fact, that shadowing is taking place, and you will get messages specifically for shadowing that you'll need to have to react to.
Okay, Lou, I didn't get your position at Margaretten. What is your title there?
I'm network manager.
Network manager for Margaretten. Margaretten, the brokerage.
Mortgage banking.
There you go. Thanks a lot, Lou. Okay, thanks a lot for coming on the program with us. And now what we're going to do is move it over to Brenda Hess and Harvey Skinner to talk about backup and recovery recommendations.
Thanks, Carl. Just to recap, Brian and I talked about most of the unplanned downtime, and now the last half of the audio conference, we're going to be discussing about planned downtime. As you can recall from the template that we give you to sit there by the system console, it is basically two particular areas, both from a backup, both partial and full backup, then also into the patch and installation. So I have with me Harvey Skinner, who is the data storage architect here at CSY in the R&D lab. And Harvey, you and I both, once again, have worked with numerous of customers as far as their backup needs, and they always want the fastest way to back up their data center. Is there a way that we can, you know, best approach this area on giving recommendations to customers?
The first thing we really realize is the backup and recovery is really a key part of maximizing system availability. And it is only a part of an overall total disaster recovery plan. There are four key components to backup and recovery. These are the backup utility that you're going to use to back up your system, the backup devices that you're using to store the data on, the disk storage configuration. This includes the way the data is dispersed between the disks, the way the disks are segmented into different user volume sets, and also the hardware configuration, how many spindles you have per IM channel and that.
Okay.
So you want to optimize all of these to really have a good, complete strategy. And then the thing that ties them together, of course, is your backup and recovery processes that you're going to use. Currently, many people tend to focus on how to most optimize their backup, and they tend to forget the recovery part of it.
Right.
I would really encourage people to review their backup and recovery plans and focus a little more on recovery, try to optimize recovery, because the only reason you back up to begin with is to recover.
Right. Okay. Is there a way that, as far as recommendations, we'll say start off with the application and then move on into the devices? On page 16, it looks like we have a good start.
Yeah, the first thing, and probably one of the best things you can do to help total availability and recovery, is to split your data into user volume sets.
Yeah, and Brian and I talked about that specifically on how to, you know, isolate the error, so to speak, as far as the user volume sets being separated by application.
Then the next key part is really the system backup. In terms of backup utilities, of course, I'm a little biased towards Calista, but some of the key things to look for would be an online backup, so you can be backing up your data while the users are still working.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few changes in terms of the MPE IX release 5.0 that will help with this. We'll get a few of those outlined in the appendix, which we can look at a little later. The second thing is to have parallel devices going at the same time. This means that you are backing up two or more devices,
okay,
with your system data at the same time. This will overall decrease your backup time, of course.
So online backup would probably be best for customers that are on that true 24/7 where they can't afford to have that, I want to say, secondary shift come in specifically for operations or for backup.
Mm-hmm. You want to try to make sure your backup gets done within a minimal downtime,
uh-huh,
or a minimal system use time.
Okay.
So if your minimal system usage time is, say, 3 hours, you're still going to have multiple devices to make sure all your data gets out in time.
Okay. I can mention data compression. I know that's an option within TurboStore. exactly how much faster or what are the advantages when you use the data compression option within TurboScope?
Data compression really has two effects. First, it has an effect on the storage capacity that you have. Now, page 17 of your package will give you a slide showing how data compression can affect your overall device capacity. In essence, it can effectively give you about 3.5 times more storage capacity just by compressing the data.
Okay.
It also has an effect on the data transfer rate. We also gave you another slide on page 19 that shows this. So because the data is compressed, you can actually have virtually more data going across the line at any one time to the device.
Okay.
So the device has less actual data that has to be written on the media.
And are there gigabytes per hour on page 19?
Page 17, the y-axis is gigabytes per hour.
Okay.
On page 17, it is, the y-axis is gigabytes.
Okay, great. Now, particular devices, moving on from data compression, do we have recommendations on both system sizes and also the device on what type of backup devices the customers be using?
Yeah, the first thing to do is give you an idea of what the various devices are available and the positioning of them. The first device on here, of course, is Hathaway's magnetic tape. As a backup device, we're not recommending that heavily unless you have data interchange needs, where various other system platforms use Hathaway's tape and you need to bring that data on your system. Probably one of the more popular backup devices is the DDS device, the millimeter DAT device. The reason for that is you have fairly high capacity being able to store maybe all of your system on one DAT tape, but yet it's less expensive than many other solutions available.
So that might meet majority of the customer needs in the DDS area?
Yeah, for the most part, unless you have a really high availability need, you'll need most of the need for systems up into the 30 gigabyte range.
Okay.
The next fastest device is really the magneto optical device, so this sheet it calls it rewritable optical devices. This is very much capacity type device. You can get an unattended backup very easily. But the media cost is a little higher.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of the things with MPEIX 5.0 is we released a utility with TurboStore called Store Copy, which will allow you to copy your store format from magneto optical out to less expensive tape, so that you don't have to keep these more expensive intermediates as a backup media.
Okay, and that's also included in the appendix. It says it's 5.0 TurboStore
option. Yeah, on appendix page 2, we give you a list of some benefits of Store and TurboStore and MPEIX 5.0.
Okay.
And Store Copy is listed there.
Great.
The next backup device is the fastest one we have supported right now on the HP3000, and this is the Hathaway's cartridge tape. This is sold through Storage Tech, and it is overall the fastest device we have, but it's also fairly expensive too. It has limited media capacity, so you're probably going to have an operator nearby to be swapping tapes.
Okay. So once again, the trade-off I assume is speed versus cost. As you move up the gigabyte chain at the same time system sizes, the faster the media, the more costly. At the same time, the rewritable optical devices are also available for that unattended backup for large capacities.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it looks like in summary on page 20, you know, there's multiple types of backup devices that a customer could be using with the actual, I want to say, TurboStore or backup solution that's available from also third parties to have that complete backup solution. So it looks like any particular device you could use basically meets your backup needs. Is there anything else, Harvey? As far as I noticed in the appendix, you also had TurboStore, how to use it more effectively. Is there any key areas that you want to bring out in that area?
A couple of key areas is to use the max tape up option when you can, especially for the faster devices. This will allow us to buffer more data out to the device, and it gives you a fairly significant increase in throughput.
Okay.
On 5.0, we also have more full support of the positive environment. Of course, use parallel devices whenever you can, so you can keep more data going to your backup devices. One of the other new things on 5.0 for TurboStore IX is a notify option. And this can be very helpful for shops where they want to automatically start post-attach processing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's an online backup?
Backup, yes.
Okay.
This is online backup. And I think that's pretty much it right now.
Great, Harvey, thanks. Well, that's a brief summary on basically the part of the planned downtime as far as backup on your choices of devices and based on the cost and also the speed necessary. At the same time, you need to look at your environment. Are you looking more towards that online backup where you need to have those backups occurring at the same time that the users are logged on? And at the same time, remember, this data compression is a key feature within each one of our backup solutions to make sure you get the most data compressed on your particular media. Now let's move on to patching installation, which is another key component as far as planned downtime. And I have with me Scott McClellan, which is our patch strategy architect here at CSY. And I know that the lab has been having a direct customer-focused solution team strictly designed towards patching installation improvements. And Scott, what exactly, you know, are your team working on?
What we're working on is a solution for problems in the patch and installation area. If you look at the slide on page 22, we really are showing how our solution relates to the solution that Harvey has been talking about. If you look, really, we have two separate engineering initiatives going on within the MPE lab. One to work on decreasing planned downtime, and one to work on improving, making improvements in the patch and installation area. If you look at the pie chart, you can see that there's a web there that's exploded. That basically shows how much of the planned downtime goes to doing, you know, in that model, patching and installation. And the darker arrows, the patch solution side, the ones that have the dark arrows are the patch solution components that contribute directly to making that wedge smaller.
Okay. And what's the difference between a check and a circle and a star? I see under development, under investigation. What exactly does that mean?
Well, under development means that the ones that are checked are under development. Those are the ones that have actually made it through the investigation phase and are in the development phase. So the engineers are actually working on the design and the code for that. The ones with the round bullets are under investigation, which means they are currently being investigated to determine exactly what technology should be used to implement them and what features are needed to be provided. And the ones with the stars are targeted for investigation. So when engineering resources free up, they'll investigate how that, what features would be necessary in those areas and if implementation in those areas is necessary.
Okay.
This concludes tape number one. The program is continued on tape number two.